Welcome to Inside the Castle, the podcast that goes behind castle doors to have real conversations with real people about solving the nation's toughest challenges.
I'm one of your hosts today, Marie Kafka.
And I'm Aaron Schneider.
Welcome to today's episode of our People First series, where we celebrate unity, empowerment, and the diverse voices in our workforce to highlight our greatest asset, our people. Today, we are spotlighting the role of our public involvement specialist, and we have with us Dr. Keila Martin from the Chicago District and Alexandra Smith from the Mobile District, who are both public involvement specialists in addition to their regular duties. Thank you, Keila and Alex, for joining us here today.
Thank y'all so much for having me. I love this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting us.
So thanks both for being here. But before we dive into our topic, talking about public involvement, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? Keila, let's start with you.
All right. Keila Martin. I'm daughter to Laurel and James Martin. I am a Chicago native. My background is soil. I do not use the word science or scientist or any of those science type words anymore because I am in partnership with the soil. That is my jam. I love the soil, and I believe that relationship is more important than being invasive with the science part of that. But that's a whole nother podcast. So I'm going to keep moving on. This is also a second career for me, being at USACE. I started off as faculty at DePaul University, and so they offered me such a great opportunity to evolve and do something different. So I took that opportunity, and so now I'm here at the Chicago District. I am a planner, the PI specialist, as well as the EJ coordinator for my district. And I do a lot of community work around food sovereignty. I have a project with the Center for Humans and Nature around rerooting kinship and oneness. And one of the questions we're asking is about our relationship with soil. So as I said, soil is my jam. I'm so excited to be here with Marie and Aaron and Alexandria, and I look forward to the interrogation that I know Marie has for us. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Alexandria Smith. You can call me Alex. I am the Public Involvement Specialist for the Mobile District Corps of Engineers. I've been with the Corps for 10 years, and it's been a very fulfilling career. My background is actually in anthropology, and I was an archaeologist before becoming, just like Dr. Martin, I wear many hats. And now, in addition to archaeology, I do plan formulation. I'm also the district's 408 coordinator and NACRA specialist. So, like I said, a lot of hats, but I enjoy every one of them. And I am so excited to be here today and do this podcast with y'all.
All right. Thank you both for sharing a little bit about yourselves and your background. And now I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what the public involvement specialist role is, like what do you all do, and maybe a little bit about how you became interested in the role. Alex, would you like to start?
Sure. Like I said, my background is in anthropology. And so culture and people, because, you know, anthropology is the study of people, has always been very interesting to me. Being from like the Deep South, I love to see the intermingling of culture and that culture contact and what that means and how you can create a whole new culture from a blending such as Creole or other cultures such as that. And so that's what got me really into the public involvement aspect of it, of the unique opportunity the Corps has to be so involved as we are stewards of waterways, and culture derives mainly around waterways. We have such a huge input into how people live their lives by how we, you know, manage and operate our waterways. And so that direct tie has always been very interesting to me. And so when I came into the public involvement specialist position, my interest was always to emphasize that simple fact that most cultures start and maintain themselves through their waterways. and how important what we do ties into people's everyday lives.
I second that, Alex. Thank you for that response. And I would say the way I came to public involvement specialists is because it was right when COVID started, and I just started at UFACE, and I was thinking, like, what can I do to use some of the experiences and expertise I already had in my former position? What can I do here at UFACE? And so I saw an email about a public involvement specialist being needed to do some facilitation. And I was like, hey, I've been facilitating for years. Why can't I do this? So I had to take a step back, of course, because facilitating at UFACE was a little different than what I was used to doing. And so I really got interested and curious, and so started joining different meetings and work groups, and started to see, like, oh, this is really good. This is right up my alley. Really enjoy working with the public and ensuring that the work that we do at UFACE is cohesive with the community. And so just thinking about the different ways that we engage with the communities and our non-federal sponsors, and the different communication styles, the language, transparency, all of those different things really were interesting to me. And so I just head first into it, and haven't jumped back out yet, and really learned so many things from being around different people at UFACE that are also public involvement specialists that have really inspired me to keep going and really think outside the box and be creative in the way that we engage and the way we communicate and strategize and come up with solutions that are very, very great for those communities that we, work with, and helping to build. I don't want to say the word trust, because trust is an emotional thing. And so that's definitely a hard one, but I would say at least some form of high energy relationship where there is some conversation, some discussion, and shared agreements around, how we will conduct ourselves during engagement. So that's kind of how I got to it. And so I know your first question, Marie, was, what does it mean to be a public involvement specialist? And just want to let everyone know that there is a listserv where if you need anyone to facilitate or help write a public involvement plan or a communication plan, help you with any PDT meeting, support that so that you have more high energy meetings, we can do that. We can do all types of things. People are willing to travel to your different public meetings to help facilitate those as well, to help you do charrettes, help you do any type of workshops. So anything that's involving the public, you can turn to us. There's someone or someone in our cadre that could definitely support your work and take that load off of you. And they come in, they know it, they can support you so that you have the best project moving forward.
Thanks, Akilah. I think that's awesome. And I really honed in on, you talked about different ways to engage the public. And I know in some of my own experience, we've had some pretty challenging meetings kind of going into areas where the Corps is proposing a project that will impact people. But we always seem to struggle with getting the message out to everyone. I mean, a lot of times you'll have a meeting, maybe during the workday or after the workday to try to accommodate some folks, we try to message in different ways of media, like emails or, in the newspaper, but it just seems like it's always really hard to get the word out. Could you talk about some of the common barriers to effective public participation and really the tools you have to overcome those barriers?
So yeah, barriers to communicating and getting the word out. So I'll give an example of a project that we are working on now at our district and with the Detroit district as well as the Buffalo district. And so this is the Great Lakes Coastal Resiliency Study. And so we're looking at 8 states, right? That's a lot of people. And that's a lot of non-federal sponsors that we're working with. And so we were very diligent and very strategic in thinking about, because we held 12 shared vision meetings back in April. And so we were trying our best to get the word out. One of the barriers was not everybody has access to internet, of course. This is not a new thing. Of course, we like to do stuff over internet, like send emails, and not everybody's interested in email, period, right? Facebook page, not everybody's interested in social media. And then we had the other part of this, which is our tribal nations. And so how do we engage with them in an effective, impactful way so that they feel like they are also partners with us? So we spent a lot of time with the CPCX, which is our Center for Public Participation and Collaboration center of expertise to kind of help us really think about what that could look like. So we created a postcard, which we sent out, mailed that out. We engaged the states, you know, each of the 8 states, to help us get a list together of people they already send their newsletters out to, or whatever, you know, communications that they send out. So we tried to involve as many people as we could to help us get the word out. Even though we did a whole bunch of stuff, we still didn't get as many people as we thought would come to these meetings. And at the same time, we had a lot of people come. But for 8 states, it wasn't that many people if you look at the, you know, totality of that. And so we definitely call it a success either way because we have a chance to put that out there. And so we also created a website where you can subscribe to it. We encouraged everybody that was part of the project, you know, part of the PDT and the states, to put that in whatever communications that they send out and encourage people to subscribe, because that would be the way that they could always stay up to date with the project. And I think that's been pretty good for us to ensure that people know what we're doing, because this is going to impact everybody, right? The Great Lakes are important. They're our drinking water source. And so we want to make sure that people are at the proverbial table and being able to speak to that and help us with the decisions that we are making and the, you know, strategies that we're trying to employ to do the, you know, the best for the Great Lakes and the people who inhabit it, as well as the flora and fauna. We are now moving on to some focused evaluation workshops. And so I'm sure we're going to go back to the table and think about, you know, what we did before to what we're doing now as far as reaching out to, you know, folks to make sure that they're there in person. And it's, you know, it's just a different life now. You know, not everybody wants to meet in person. People are now interested in that virtual environment. And that brings in a whole nother energy of the preparation of virtual engagements with the public. We spent a lot of time thinking about that, thinking through that, as far as, you know, being as engaging as possible, making sure we capture the attention and that so that people will have interest in it and also, you know, ask questions and provide whatever thought loops that they could to the project. So I'm going to stop there because I feel like I'm rambling, and invite Alex to the stage, to the story.
Oh, no, Dr. Martin, that was really good. You're always very insightful with your responses. Mine is a little different because it's more scaled down. So being in Mobile District, most of the communities I work with are very rural, being in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, and they're also majorly underserved. And so a big hurdle that I face is meeting them where they are. And that's kind of something that I try to use to my advantage. And I really emphasize going out. I think a lot of the times the disconnect, especially with rural communities, is just that a disconnect, especially that we live in a virtual world. And a lot of these people may not have email addresses. They might not even have internet access. They may not need it. And also knowing how, again, how our waterways impact their lives. And so that's why it's important to meet them where they are. A great example of that for me is a recent project I had in which we were in a predominantly, according to census data, a predominantly African-American county in Alabama. And we held a series of public meetings, and 3 people of color showed up to these public meetings, and it was probably like 100 people at each meeting. And so I was like, what happened here, right? What we look at is that we use the term underserved communities a lot now, but how did they get that way? We have to face the fact that oftentimes us as the core, us as the federal government, even our non-federal sponsors may be the reason that these communities are underserved. When you have such a disconnect like that, you have to meet them where they are in order to serve them. You have to do your research, your history, in order to understand how exactly did this community become underserved? What exactly are they lacking? And then in the terms of us being the core and us being stewards of the waterways, again, tying back to how integral water is to communities, there is more than likely some way that we can lessen that gap and provide a service to this community in terms of their waterway. Again, I go back to meeting them where they are, actually going out on site visits, going to where these communities are, because you cannot rely on a Facebook blast. You can't rely on an email post. You can't rely on that because, again, going back to the community being underserved, even if they get that notification, they may feel that this meeting isn't for them because, again, they haven't been serviced in the past. So why would this be any different? And why would they waste their time? These are, you know, people who a lot of times, you know, their time is literally money, you know, and so they don't have leisure time to spend an hour or two to listen to me rattle on about engineering concepts that they don't understand anyway. And that's another thing, going back to meeting them where they are, how does this community interact with the waterway that we're trying to change? Because every community interacts differently. And that's another challenge of being a public involvement specialist is oftentimes, especially the federal government, we see the public as one entity when we're talking about individual communities. And we can be within one project area, and how one community interacts with this waterway is completely different than how the other community interacts with it. And you have to understand that as a public involvement specialist going in and saying, hey, I want to do this to your waterway. But the question of the public is always going to be, well, how does that impact me? And if you don't have the answer to that, you're wasting their time. And so it's really, like I said, it's important before you even have a public meeting to go out on site and just observe, just put on your anthropological hat and be a participant and observe what's going on. Just watch how people are interacting with that waterway. And that, again, will inform who all you need to make sure is at the table for these discussions.
I second that, Alex. Thank you for bringing up that word underserved, as well as meeting the people where they are. And going back to that whole word usage and language and communication, is that ensuring that we're using the language that they use, right? And I'm not even speaking the language of like Spanish or French or whatever. I mean the language, how people communicate with each other, how they get those points across. And so that great idea to have people go out mm-hmm. there on foot, be in person to observe, which is really important. Not be an interloper, right? Observe in a sense that you are, you know, a safe space, right? That you are there and in their sacred space, and that you respect those boundaries as well while you are doing the observing. So thanks, Alex, for that. That was awesome.
Wow, you both have just given me so much to think about and appreciate, and to just try to start to wrap my mind around how one would even begin in kind of this strategic kind of engagement. There's just so much to consider, and y'all are going to be really busy, I think, after this podcast, because so many people are going to want to have a public involvement specialist.
It's a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure you're just telling us about the little, you know, like the tip of the iceberg. So thank you for that. So we heard a lot about the different kind of challenges that you have to think about or in this role. And I'm wondering if you can share with us maybe the most memorable experience you've had so far. Maybe it was a public meeting or a charrette or something that you thought was successful, or just something that you were proud of that you led. If you can think about that and share with us what that engagement was and what kind of factors you think contributed to the success of that particular event or project.
I'm still thinking. I feel like we're working on it. But I guess I can talk about the go back to the Great Lakes Coastal Resiliency Study and those, I think it was 12 shared vision meetings that we had over a 2-week period. They were all virtual meetings. And so I was the facilitator. And I'm very proud of that because that was a lot of work because we spent hours, you all. When I say hours, I literally mean hours meeting with the non-federal sponsors individually. So that's 8 different states, right? We did dry runs with each state. We did like just individual meetings with each state. We had meetings with our tribal nations that are in the area. Oh, so many meetings, you all. And we overprepared, which was very, very much a lot of work. And it paid off because we tried to anticipate any and everything that could occur during these public shared vision meetings. One of the things I'm really proud of is the way we really thought about the engagement piece of these meetings, because, you know, we have our core speech and, you know, how we do our presentations and things of that nature. And a lot of times they're not as enlivening as you would want them to be. And so I discussed with the presenters and encouraging them and motivating them to less words on slide, more imagery, you know, tone of voice, word usage, things of that nature. We did a lot of prep for that. It was exciting because we had a few interns working with us from different districts, as well as, you know, a lot of us at our Chicago district and Buffalo and Detroit working together. So just imagine the coordination of those meetings that we had to put together. And when we actually had the 12 meetings over a 2-week period, it was just awesome at the end because once we finished it, we had a song that we chose, a different song for each meeting. After each meeting that we would dance to and sing to and record, you know, because it was a lot of energy, right? And so I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of the engagement pieces that we put into the different meetings to make sure that the audience stayed engaged. We made it so it was accessible to as many people. We had interpreters. We had, during some of the meetings, where some of the states could afford to pay for someone to do that. And if they had questions, this person would, you know, answer the question, whether it was verbally and or written in, you know, the chat, so that everyone had an opportunity to access the meeting and the content. So I was really proud of that, of our efforts and energy and how we really thought about that. And I really appreciated the way the team worked together, that everyone had a voice, everyone was listened to. And that just shows how great, you know, public participation, having a public involvement specialist, you know, immersed in your project to help enliven everything. And so it was just activated. I really love that. And I'm looking forward to this next round of public meetings that we'll have. So, yeah, thank you for asking that question.
Well, for me, I would argue that one of my most successful public meetings that I was a part of was not a public meeting at all. It wasn't scheduled at all. So going back to the project in that rural county in Alabama, I, again, putting on a different hat, I had on my archaeology hat, as I was also the archaeologist for the project, and I had went out to do some pedestrian survey. And the alignment that we were planning on doing, what I found was when I went out there was a large group of Black fishermen. I mean, when I say large, it was 25 people out there. And I talked to a few of them and they were saying the only reason why it wasn't 100 of them was because it was getting ready to rain. And the alignment that we were doing, that we were talking about doing, one of our alternatives, was going to destroy this fishing camp. Like, it went right through it. And I was like, are we not tracking this? So I spoke with some of the fishermen, got some of their input, and we had just did like the comment cards that we were going to use for the public meetings. And because we were, part of my team was down there for site visits. Part of my team was down there for the public meetings. So it was a lot going on for the project at the same time. So I literally drove over, because again, this is a very rural area, so it takes an hour to get to anywhere. So I drove an hour to my coworker who had the comic meetings, and we had already done two of them and saw that there were no African-American people showing up. And I was like, I found where they are. Like, we aren't going to them, you know? I was like, I need the comment cards. So when I got the comment cards, I rushed back because, you know, how fishermen are, they fish early in the morning and then they go home, especially down here in Alabama, because once it hits 8 o'clock, it's 100 degrees already. So I ran back down. And by this time, it's like 9 o'clock. And so not that many are there. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to come back tomorrow. We were having another public meeting. We were having it that evening. And I knew that it was going to be hard for a lot of them to accommodate coming to something that short notice. So I was like, are you going to, I know you're going to probably be here tomorrow. I was like, are you going to be here tomorrow? They was like, yes, I'm going to be here tomorrow. So I got my team and I was like, look, because a lot of us were scheduled to head straight back. And so I went to my team and I was like, look, I know, you know, y'all are supposed to be going back home to your families and everything. But this is the community that we're impacting. We really need their comments more than anything. And so a lot of my team decided to actually stay behind, stay that extra night and meet with them early the next morning to hand out comment cards and get their input and stuff. And like I said, that was one of the most successful public meetings because we were going to directly impact this community. And this was one of the first meetings that I saw actual change being implemented quickly, because I took that back to my engineers. They were able to reroute it and it actually turned out to be more advantageous to the project itself. In addition to the project implications, we were also able to improve our operations because we noticed a lot of safety issues at the fishing site that they were at. And so we were able to install some improvements, install some lighting, clean up the bathroom. Just basic things that you don't think about that really improve these people's quality of life. So we got the local, the state to put up signage about fish pollution because that wasn't present. So we were able to really make some impacts off of just that happenstance that I was doing, you know, archaeology in the area. But that kind of just circle back around to my original point of meeting people where they are. You know, if we're not conducting these site visits and understanding how people are in, we can end up having a quote unquote successful public meeting where hundreds of people show up, but these could be people who don't even interact with the waterway. These could be people from who, you know, God knows where. And so you really aren't ensuring that you are really getting comments and collaboration from the communities that you're impacting unless you can see it.
Thanks, Alex. That's amazing. I think the two of you are like blowing my mind. It's really fun to listen to you guys talk. I probably could talk to you for hours and hours. Obviously, we don't have that much time on a podcast, but you know, some of the things that you've said, I think, have been really impactful. In particular, you know, I think the core generally feels like the public is one entity, but the reality is it's made up of a very diverse field of people that have all kinds of different backgrounds, that have all kinds of different uses for the facilities we make or not. And it's just really a challenge to figure out, like, how do you meet with them? How do you communicate to them in a way that's understandable? And it's a lot of people speak engineering talk, and engineering talk is, you know, maybe not what the public generally understands. And, you know, looking at some of the public meetings I've gone through is I've always taken the approach of like, oh, the person that's the most upset is kind of the person that I want to go and talk to. And we normally maybe don't agree on something, but at the end, we kind of get respect for each other. And we did a big project in North Dakota, and we had team members that would go door to door to people that we knew would be impacted by the project to get their input. And so many people thought, wow, you guys are crazy to go door to door, talk to these people out in the field. But the reality was, even though they disagreed, they did build respect and an understanding, and we could hear their concerns. And then we could also make adjustments to the project based on those concerns. And I think the public sometimes thinks like, oh, I'm just going to give you these public comments. It's meaningless. But the reality is good public comments, we do accommodate those and we look at them and they help us change our decision. So focusing on the diversity of the public, I'm kind of curious. I know you've talked a little bit about how you've gone out to meet with people at the site, but how do you also tailor your communication methods to meet those different needs?
Oh, that's a really good question. I will say most people are visual learners. And so what's really helpful is to have a map, first and foremost, like where you are geographically, a very legible map with street names. And again, like people have to know how to place themselves. And a lot of the public meetings that I've been involved in, if they don't have that, if they're not able to geographically place themselves, again, like it's just kind of pie in the sky for them. So that's one thing. It's bringing it down to that community level of, yeah, this project is around the street from the daycare that you take your kid to school at, you know? So again, tying it back. And that, when you look at it through that lens of, okay, how small do I need to narrow down this map in order for this community to understand geographically where they are? That also helps you identify how they may be interacting with the waterway. What is their proximity to the waterway? What businesses or industries are close to the waterway? Do they use their waterway more as industry? Do they use it for tourism? Do they use it for subsistence? And you may be able to infer that from a really good map. Utilize, you know, your GIS folks, your map makers. And so you can draw up a really good illustration of where you are and how it relates to where the project is. So that's first and foremost for me. In addition to that, just having more or less a workshop style meeting in which not only are you as a core presenting what your project is, but you're allowing the public and your non-federal sponsor and whoever else may be in attendance to also voice their concerns about the area. I think a lot of times we as a core get so focused in on our project. We're just like this tunnel vision of our project. And I love that about us because that's what gets things done. But also we have to be holistic in the sense of sometimes we have to let the public come to us, and it may be things that have nothing to do with our project or our plans. It's still great to lend that listening ear, first and foremost. And second off, it may not mean that what they're telling you may not impact something in the future. It may better explain why something is the way that it is. And so it's always good to get the full story. And I know a lot of people kind of see that honestly as wasting time, but it's always good to give these communities a platform. And like I said, so that's my big thing is to one, have a map, and two, just let them talk. And we'll figure out the working project itself later. But for right now, what are your concerns? You know, just how we have our problems, opportunities, and objectives for a project. What are your problems, opportunities, and objectives for this waterway? And maybe we can find some way to implement a project that satisfies those. This project may not be it. But I think that's a really important thing to not come in the mindset of, oh, I have to make this presentation. To come in the mindset of, I need to ask the right questions to solicit answers that will actually inform not only this project, but how the core can improve as a whole.
Yeah, I guess I would also add, as far as communication based off the question that you asked, Aaron, because I felt like I heard you say what type of communication or strategies or something like that is how we, you know, how we engage with the public. So just thinking about the language, the word, you know, that we're using when we're on their turf in a sense. And so I can give an example of a public meeting. Well, we had several public meetings in September, but they were about a dam removal, which is a very, you know, high tension field experience, period, because people don't want the dams removed because, you know, they have recreation opportunities that they want to continue to engage in. And so the PDT had to, and I wasn't the planner on that project. I was invited in as a public involvement specialist, as a facilitator for these public meetings. And so one of the things that I knew up front was that I knew that I would have to figure out a way to keep the tension at a balance, in a sense, right? And so being able to communicate that in a way to folks in the room, which was a really, the space that we had was kind of not the space we wanted because we were in a courthouse, which you already know that that's not the great place to be for a public meeting, but that was all we had and that's what we had to use. And so lots of tension just around the space, right? And so I had already thought about like what would be some strategies I can use to keep people in balance and grounded and making sure that everyone is listening, right? As much as possible, because intention filled things, you know, everyone wants to have a voice. People want to, you know, be louder and feel like what they're saying is correct. And so I had told the crowd in the beginning that, you know, if I feel like that something is, you know, going to cause some tension in a way that's not appropriate, that we're going to do this exercise. And I made everyone in the room say yes, that they agreed to this exercise. And they all agreed. And that's also about communication strategy and tone of voice and all those different things. And so I didn't have to use that exercise during that time, but I was prepared, right? Because I knew I was anticipating the type of energy that we would receive in that meeting. After that first meeting, which was probably the most tension-filled one, we got together with the commander to kind of talk about, you know, the experience that we had. So, because we were going to have two more meetings back-to-back, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, we were ready for the next time. And of course, we were prepared for the next day, and it wasn't nowhere near the amount of tension, but also helped with the communication and, you know, us being in the room in the before the meeting started where people were talking. We had, as Alex said, we had maps up. We had all types of things to engage people before and after the meeting. And our commander kind of walked around the room before the meeting to kind of meet people and answer any questions. So that was really helpful. And I think that also helped to ground those following meetings because we did, you know, we thought about what that could look like, what that communication. And communication is not just verbal, right? So it's our body language, all of that was part of that. And so we thought about all of those things as we're in this meeting because we know how people feel about dam removal. And so we, you know, we made sure that we tailored our language as we were giving our presentation to ensure that people didn't feel like, you know, this was some willy-nilly idea that we came up with as a corp. We just want to snatch it away. So, you know, we spent some time thinking about what that could look like. And of course, people already come with their preconceived notions. And so I'm not sure that we changed anybody's minds, of course. But at the same time, just showing the public that we have spent time thinking about how we want to engage and communicate, I think goes a long way.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Just as you were talking about grounding and just making sure to kind of check the energy of the room, it just seems like such a positive way to get commitment from everyone in there before, you know, actually continuing with the conversation and the discussion. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing that example. What final thoughts do you have that you want to leave with our listeners today? Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share before we end today? Alex, I'll throw that over to you first.
We are a part of the public that we serve. I had a great instructor one time. He asked us, what is our first memory with water? And that was a great grounding experience because most people's answers were rooted in family and tradition, right? Just think about your first experience with water, how life-changing and life-affirming it was for you to the creek behind your grandma's house when you're a kid or whatever it may be, and think and just remember that it's, you know, people is kids still doing that, and we may be impacting that for better or for worse. And so just remember that you are a part of the public that you serve, and so, you know, treat them how you would treat yourself.
So I agree, Ashe, to Alex's statement about the grounding. And I would also add that whether this is a public meeting or any meeting that you're having, whether that's with the PDT or even with families and friends, shared agreements are really important. And so really thinking deeply about what those shared agreements / commitments could be before starting anything. And I would also say starting correctly is very important. Always keep that in mind, because the first impression is always the lasting impression. And I'm sure we all know that. And then I'll just leave you with my favorite African proverb that you probably heard before is, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, you go together. And so thank you so much for inviting us to share and impart some really good wisdom with you all. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Akyla and Alex, for sharing your stories and telling us more about the public involvement specialist role in the Corps. We appreciate you and your insights. To our listeners, we want to hear from you what topics are important to you and who you're interested in hearing from. Until next time, be safe, be innovative, and tell your story.
Thanks for joining us for this Inside the Castle podcast. To provide your feedback, email us at cw.infrastructure.team@usace.army.mil. Stay tuned for additional Inside the Castle podcasts as we explore life inside the Corps and revolutionize civil works together.